We hope you enjoy the following presentation of First Steps in the Interpretation of Birth Charts, Part 1, by Dane Rudyar. This recording is 44 minutes long. This audio is brought to you by RITA, the Rudyar Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyar. All material is copyrighted by Leila Rudyar Hill. If you'd like to learn more about RITA, or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyarinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyar, visit www.rudyaraudioarchives.com. And now, Dane Rudyar.
Well, what I wanted to, as a kind of conclusion to those very brief talks, was to try to deal with the interpretation of a birth chart, because after all, that is the things that we, most everybody is interested in. But there is a great deal, I think, that would have to be said, should have to be said, which is general, but yet which is not so easy to find in books. Whereas you can find, if you read my books or any other books, all sorts of data as to what to do with this or that and which that means and so on. But it's the general approach to the things which is important. What is a birth chart? What do you do with it? Why you want having a birth chart? Why do you interpret it and so on? And if you don't have at least a very basic sense of certain values which deal with interpretation and the why of the interpretation and so on, I think that you kind of flounder into a kind of fortune-telling business. And that is, of course, the kind of thing which I have tried all my life, my astrological life, to undo is that definite approach which has to do with events and event-oriented astrology, predictive astrology, and the things which deal purely with external correlation between planetary motion and physical plane event in the life of a person. Astrology is, as I see it, is a technique of understanding of life. It's a discipline of thinking. That, as to me, is the most important thing. An unfortunate thing is that so many astrologers are eager to do everything except thinking. But the real value of astrology is to be able to think in a different way about life, your existence, and all what happened in your existence, and your own growth, and the meaning of your own life. All that, you see, can be seen in a new perspective if you deal with astrology. So, by learning how to think in terms of astrological symbol and what these symbols imply, basically, your relationship to the universe, to the skies, and so on, by learning to do that, you see, by developing that the discipline of thinking, you learn to deal with situation in an entirely different way. And that's the only thing that is really worthwhile in astrology. Astrology really is a technique to discover the meaning and the value of any whole situation, so that you see any situation which you meet, which confronts you, as a whole, as much as a whole as you can possibly see it. Most of us, when we meet a situation, don't see it as a whole at all. You don't meet it as a whole. You meet certain aspects of the things. If you are a girl and you meet a very nice man or something like that, you may think of how beautiful eyes, or his nose is fine, and beautiful lips. Or you may think, oh, he must be very wealthy, or, oh, he feels sexy, and so on. But those are all parts of the situation, you see. So that if you want to meet that boy with the wholeness of yourself, the wholeness of that person, so that you have a whole meeting, you have to try to see the way in which the whole situation, the situation as a whole, is structured. You being part of that structure, the other person being part of that structure. And what you when I speak of meeting between a boy and a girl, and it's the same thing about meeting a possibility of having a new profession or meeting the possibility of taking a trip and all that. You may be bored at home and you say, oh, I wish I would get away or something like that. But that's only part of the situation, you see. You want to try to see the whole situation. And of course, if you are very intuitive, if you are able to reach a center within you which can talk to you and give you very basic informations as to what the whole thing means and all that, that's fine. But how many of us really do? And it is very dangerous, and very not dangerous, but it is very often that it is we are confused, we are brainwashed by a certain aspect of our, I was going to say anatomy, which is true also, our anatomy or our psychology. And we don't see this thing as a whole. We are glamorized into this or that. Now, by looking at the chart, whether it is your chart or the chart of another person, or the chart of a particular time at which a certain decision has to be made, all that has only one function, is to try to tell you what are the potentiality of that particular situation. And somewhat referring to it, but not too much, but still in a way, I suppose you may understand what I mean by that. I came across not so long ago a Chinese saying, which I think is wonderful. Any fool can count the seeds in an apple, but not even the wisest man can count the apples in a seed. Do you see what that means? It has relevance to astrology in that sense. That, you see, the mysterious things, an astrological chart is a seed. And it is, no one really can decipher completely all the possible apple trees that may come, or apples that may come out of that seed. And yet, you have there in potentiality all that is going to develop in some way or other. And to try to see it as a whole, it is essentially. Now, when I speak of a person, it is a whole, it is a whole of existence. Any system of activities which are interdependent, interrelated, which are centered around some center of consciousness, can be called a person, can be called, whether it is an individual person, like a human being, or whether it is a collective person, like a nation or a firm, a big business firm and all that, a corporation. All those things have certain function, that it is a whole of activities. It has to establish itself. It has to find its place in the environment, whether it is the biological or the social environment. It has to maintain itself. It has to grow to some extent. It has to develop, to multiply itself, and perhaps in many cases. And to some extent, it has to be able to be open to the possibility of transforming itself in relation to new situation that may arise. Now, the thing that I have said before, and I think it is worth repeating, every person is born because the universe needs that person at that time and at a certain place. Anything that happens has a very definite purpose in terms of the need of fulfillment of that greater whole within which that thing is born. Now, this is a very important thing because you see that purposive or teleological, if you want to use a philosophical term, attitude to astrology is very different. In fact, it's basically different from the usual thing, which is a purely analytical approach. Now, most people, you see, when they look at a chart, are trying to find out what the person is. You find in your book that if the sun is in Taurus, that person has this and this characteristic. If the moon is there, it has another type of characteristic. If you have all the planet in one way or those things, it tells what the person is. And most people think that the value of astrology is to try to know yourself and to know the other person better, which is all right. The only trouble is that you get, if you take purely that approach, you get into a situation where curiosity about all sorts of things which you have no business particularly to be curious about becomes a very important factor in your attitude. You want to know how everything is, how this person is, and all that, and you look at the chart in order to try to find all their secrets, you know. Well, it's all right, in a way. But after all, that is not particularly the thing which is two very nice things to do, in many cases, unless you are definitely involved in that person, and that person knows it, and welcome it, and so on. I personally feel that there is a great deal of invasion of privacy in the attitude of most astrologers. After all, everybody should be what they want to be, and unless you have very important relationship with it, you shouldn't be concerned with it. But to me, that is not really the most important thing in astrology, as far particularly of yourself is concerned. What I see in a chart is not so much what the person is, but what the person should be. In other words, you get there what the potential of a person is. You don't know at all, and you have no way of knowing exactly how that potential will become actualized. Everybody has the freedom, to some extent at least, to be what he is not. Not to be his own truth, not to fulfill the things which is its function, not to meet the need of the world at the place in which he is born, the need of the world of which that person is a solution. You are a solution to the problem of the world at a certain time. Therefore, what the chart tells you is how best you can meet that need. The chart is your solution. There is nothing that you have to do about it except to understand it and to work with it. And therefore, the whole approach is in a sense reversed. Instead of looking at the position of a planet in a house, and I think I mentioned that already, but I have mentioned it to so many people who say yes, yes, and then never even think of it the next day when they look at another chart and so on. What the position of a planet in a house or a sign of the zodiac or wherever it is means is that planet, which represents a basic function in the nature of the person, a basic functional activity in the whole organism which that person is. Well, that planet is in a sovereign position. Therefore, it tells you you can best fulfill that function by seeing it, by understanding it in term and by working it out in term of the type of experience which are represented by the houses, in term of the kind of mode of energy which is represented by, to some extent, by the sign of the zodiac, you see, and so on. So that everything which is in the chart is there for a purpose, and that purpose has to be fulfilled if you want to actualize the potentiality of your birth chart. Now, the moment you do that, you see, and again, I have mentioned it already, but it is so much against the trend of the textbook astrology, of medieval astrology and all that, that it is hard for people to understand it, and I know how hard it is to apply it even, because the traditional patterns are so strong in the subconscious that they always extrude, you know, and you tend to follow them without noticing, and then you stop and say, oh, I shouldn't say that, you know. But you have then to realize that there is no bad planet, there is no, that a planet is merely a function. Now, Saturn is no worth a thing as your bones. And if you have no bones, where will you be, you know? Jupiter is no better than your liver, and your liver can cause a lot of trouble. Metabolism, I mean, which has much to do mostly with Jupiter at a biological level, to some extent Venus also a little, but and Mars also, everything is involved in everything else. So that's the point with an organic system, that every activity is involved in every other activity. And that's why the modern medicine is so bad, is because it takes a symptom, it takes just one little part of that body and just look at it. And if he's a specialist in that thing, if you have trouble there, you look at a specialist and know that, and pay no attention whatsoever with the rest of the body. And most astrologers do that too. As I have often said, I mean, if people will tell you, oh, this is going to be a difficult year because Saturn is transiting over your sun, but all the other planets are also doing something. And the fact that they are not maybe in exact conjunction or in exact square and all that doesn't mean they are not active. You know? Everything is always active. But if there is a special kind of focalization of that activity, then you are somehow forced to pay more attention to it, you see. But to say that you will have a bad year because Saturn is moving over your sun makes no sense whatsoever. It may mean that if the sun represents a vital function, it may mean that your vitality may be to some extent limited. But being limited doesn't mean that it is going to be bad. You may be running all around the place and wasting your energies and your powers and so on. And the best thing that may happen to you for the development of your personality and your consciousness and all that may be that you will get a sense of how to focalize your energy on one particular factor. But we get so depressed about something because we make images of what is going to happen. And of course it never really happened the way we made the image. But in the meantime we have intruded into the situation, the vital, the cosmic situation. Our mind has intruded, has put into it a new factor, which is fear. You see? And that can be sometimes very devastating. Now, there are all sorts of things which can be said along those lines, you see. Take, for instance, the idea of interpretation. If you are a practicing astrologer, so-called, somebody come to you and you see their birth chart, you make their birth chart, you look at it, and you see certain things, and like most astrologers would do, they say, oh, look at, or if they don't say outwardly perhaps, but they say inwardly, oh, look at that square and this, and look at this, this and this, and look at that and this and that, and so on. Those things, okay, they are there, but first you have to try to interpret them for, in terms of what they mean to the balance, to the functioning of your entire person, and not separately. And we'll come back in a moment to the idea of pattern and all that. Then there is another situation which could come later, but I mean, I've started, so finish with it. You have to realize that you are talking to a person who is at a particular phase of the development of all those potentiality which you find in the birth chart and all that. He has a certain age, he has a certain kind of consciousness, and therefore you have to talk to the person as that person is at the moment you meet that person. Not in terms of an abstraction, the chart and all that, you know, that this means this, this means that, timelessly, in empty space. No, you are dealing with a person. And if that person is at a stage of consciousness where that person is not ready to know about certain things, which maybe are still in the future, or is in a completely depressed stage, or in any other situation whatsoever, you can do a great deal of harm to that person. You have therefore to take in consideration what I call the moment of interpretation. And the moment of interpretation is a factor which is nearly as important in some cases as the moment of birth of that person. Why did that person come at that particular time to me to get an interpretation? See? That is the first thing that you have to try to understand when somebody comes to you. Why? What is it? What need is there? You know. And of course the age is a very obvious expression of the certain need sometimes. Certain things can be said to a person at 45, which you cannot say to a person maybe at 16 or 17 or 14, or you can say something to a certain person at a certain time of their life, and you can perhaps not say it at the time when they are just emerging for a heart crisis, or you can see that they are facing a heart crisis coming, and so on. So that when you are dealing with a person, deal with it as a meeting, a real meeting, an encounter. Jung was the first one really to understand that, and to say any psychological analysis, or the whole thing of analysis, in which the psychologist doesn't gain something, a new point of view or something, is always something wrong with it. The patient, the client, may gain a great deal with it, but so does the psychologist. And if it doesn't, if he remains completely aloof, he remains uninvolved in the situation at all, if it doesn't bring him to him something out of the relationship with that person, then there is something wrong in the whole process. And that is also very true in terms of astrological meetings. So that it's the moment of interpretation is something that you have always to take into consideration. That is why I hate to try to take a chart on a blackboard or something like that and say, now, how would you interpret this? And I said, I don't know. Who is it? You know. In what condition is that person that I should talk to? What person is it? To me, there is nothing more stupid than those blind reading of charts, if you don't even know whether it's a man or a woman or something like that. Because it can mean anything. You see, of course, certain kind of potentiality, you can make a certain analysis of character to some extent, and certain traits, and you see certain possibility of this and that. But so what? What does it do to you? What does it do to the other person? You see. The point is that when you do a chart, is the expression, it is an answer to a need. It is a symbol. It is like if you have a dream, you know, the whole idea that, which is a true thing, so it's not an idea, but people sometimes say they have never dreamt, and yet, and then they manage to get to a psychologist for some reason, and the night before they go to the meeting, they have a big dream. Well, that is the point again, you see. The dream is an expression of the need of that particular moment of interpretation of the life of that person. And it wouldn't have any meaning if it had not come just before that. It is, call it the unconscious or the God within or whatever you want to call it, who has a chance finally to have an intermediary, a mediator between himself and that ego, blind, dumb fool, you know, all mixed up and so on. And say, now I can talk to him, maybe somebody will help me to make my words understood. And so he make an effort and the person finally has to have that kind of dream, you see. But it is the moment at which this thing happened which is important. Sure, you have to know the sort of basic idea as to what an aspect mean, what a cycle and all those things like that, what all those functions mean. You have to learn the language of astrology. But words are words, but it is only as they come together in relation to a particular thinking, a particular thought, that they really become significant. In themselves, you can take a dictionary and look at all those words. They are very interesting, but so what do you know more about your problem? You know, you have to put them together into a sentence, into a text in some way. And that is the same thing in relation with astrology. I mean, do you understand that, or is it something which seems completely beside the point? Mm-hmm. What?
It's one of my favorite expressions of what you call a birth chart. You said that the birth chart is the score of the symphony that a living man is.
Yeah. You know, but you see, here is again a curious thing that happened in relation to that. Is that from our intellectual Western kind of civilization, the score is the music. And whether the score is played or not played doesn't make any difference from the point of view of the music, you know. The music is there in the score. And yet the score is not any music, because music deals with sound. And if there is no sound, there is no music, you know. If you deal with a person, there is no person unless that person is alive, here, now, you see. And if you have the score of that person in the sense of a birth chart, and the thing is not played, you know, it doesn't mean anything. Now, this is very important because, you see, you have that famous problem of the twins, or of semi-twins, or whatever it is. And people say, look, there are two charts which are practically identical. Nobody would hardly see any difference the way astrology is used today. And I might add, as a parenthesis, that it is remarkable how intellectually dishonest some astrologers are, because they will tell you, oh, but you see there is 5 degrees of difference or 3 degrees of difference between the ascendant, the two ascendants. Therefore, it is not the same chart, you know. It certainly doesn't disprove astrology because there are 2 different charts. And yet, if you presented either one or the other to that astrologer for an interpretation, they would make no difference whatsoever, you know. Then there are all sorts of different situations. For instance, in the case of a twin, all right, you have 2 people who have practically the same thing, but they are in the same environment. And therefore, the environment is also acting upon them. But you don't act exactly the same way on 2 different ways. I mean, the environment doesn't act completely in the same way toward those 2 people who are more or less alike. So that you will get reaction from the reactions of the environment to you. So that you may decide to be different in order to balance the things, in order to play a game, the one in front of the other or the one upon the environment. I had a case which is not unusual of 2 girls who were twins. One became a scientist and the other became a sort of mystic involved in spiritualism and all those things like that. Well, they are the same sort, but you see, the point is that they choose to cooperate in meeting the same problem in order to differentiate each one from the other. You see what I mean? So that you could not say necessarily that the possibility of doing certain thing in a certain way was there, but each one chooses a certain different approach to that possibility. You see what I mean? The moment you take the chart that way, then there is no question of fate in a certain sense, because there is always the possibility of not doing the thing that the sky wants you to do. You know? Your self-will can stand in the will against the will of God, or the will of your higher self, and so on. And by circuitous way, it may reach the same goal, but there are different ways in which you can reach it. So that if you see a chart on somebody, the point is this, but if you, what you see in the chart is, this is the way, for instance, if, I think I mentioned that before, I don't know if it was there or in Hollywood, but if Mars is in the 6th house, it doesn't mean that you are going to be ill. It means that you have to use your Mars function, which you mobilize your energy mainly, more, it will be the most effective if in terms of that 6th house type of experience, which may mean work, which may mean service, which may mean a personal crisis of reorganization, of retraining, which may mean also illness and health problem and so on. And if you have Jupiter there, it can be no reason why it should be better than another, because you can eat too much, you can have a situation where you expand through that kind of things, you expand through that service. You see, every planet is a definite function. And see it as that function. And what you can tell to the person, what should I do, well, or how should I meet this situation, that is what the person wants to do. But you have to be very careful, of course. Because what you are doing there is a kind of counseling things. But it's a counseling which is based on a very definite structure, which is for you to interpret. But try to interpret in terms of the wholeness of it, and not in terms of the superficiality of one factor or another, which seems to appeal to you more than the other. But this problem of the time of the interpretation, that's why it's very important. That's why I wish, if you are interested, that you should get all that little booklet, Interpretation and Birth Chart as a whole, which is the last chapter also of that book, The Person-Centered Astrology. From a practical standpoint, the most important one of my books is perhaps The Lunation Cycle, well, The Pulse of Life, yes, also in order to understand the sign of the zodiac better and more intelligently, and then Lunation Cycle. And then as an overview of the thing, which I think is quite valuable, The Practice of Astrology, which is a little small paperback, which covered the whole field of astrology and has two or three different chapters at first on its step-by-step of to take in dealing with birth chart. And the first step is to know what you are trying to do, you know. The third, I can't remember, says how to organize your work, how to organize yourself so that you are dealing with the situation in an efficient way. It's very amusing how fashion comes in the world, especially in the American world. It was perfectly normal for many years to have charts which were divided into 12 sections, you know, and the center was supposed to be the Earth, and you mark the degrees of the zodiac on the cusp of all the different houses, and that was fine. And then Europeans began to come up with their cosmobiology and a few other things like that. And then suddenly all the charts now, or not all the charts, but so many of them, suddenly have nice little quadrant like a second of a watch, you know, 360 little things like that, cutting all that. And then somehow you put the ascendant or the midheaven wherever it fits, and in most cases, the meridian is never square to the ascendant. And so you have a things which is purely zodiacal, but which doesn't deal with the individual person. Anything which focuses on the zodiac, which is a geocentric thing, which is a relationship of the Earth as a whole to the Sun, deal with the Earth as a whole, that is, with human nature. But it doesn't deal with an individual person. The individual person, of course, is a human being, so that there is human nature there. But it is not only human nature, is it? Human nature in a special kind of human nature at a special time in a particular place. Therefore, what is important is the division of space where that person is born. And to me, that is what the house should be. It has relatively nothing to do, basically, with the zodiac. It is division of space. And that is something which is so very difficult for people to understand, you see. Especially when you deal with the Campanus system, which is probably the most logical, though it's certainly not ideal, but I mean the simplest and the most logical one. All what you do is you take the space between the midheaven, I mean between the vertical and the horizontal, and you divide these things into what they call the prime vertical, into 30 degree of into three equal sections, and you have your 12 houses, which are equal division of space. The space around you, the real space, I mean, you know. But zodiac is not space. The zodiac is a thing. Here is, if it is your horizon, the zodiac is something like that or something like that, depending on the latitude at which you are. So that if you are trying to project or in some way relate that the zodiac things to the division of that space, of course, then you will have in 30 degrees of space above there, you will have perhaps 20 degrees of the zodiac, or you may have 45 degrees of the zodiac, or in some, if you are north enough, you might have even 90 degrees of the zodiac in that 30 degrees of space around you. But zodiac is not space. When I say that the house is things of space, it doesn't deal with a certain number of zodiacal degree, you see. But unfortunately, to my mind, astrology is still completely haunted by the concept of the zodiac. You don't need the zodiac to have astrology at all. But you are a human being who is standing on the surface of the earth and who part of the time is lying flat and part of the time standing up and dancing in between as it moves on in the world. And that is the basic things. You carry the midheaven and your horizon everywhere. Everywhere you have your horizon and your midheaven, and they're always at 90 degrees apart. But the sign of the zodiac that fits into those things can differ because the zodiac is not the horizon, neither is it the meridian, yes? The equal, what is called the equal house has to deal purely with zodiacal position, you see. But it doesn't deal with the space around you. And in most cases, therefore, the cusp of the fourth and tenth house is not perpendicular to the ascendant and the descendant. And if you are dealing with an individual person who is, for whom the chart is like a mandala, you know, is at the center of it, and there is all the power, the function that are at his disposition. There is the energy, the functional activities which are represented by the Moon, the Sun, Mars, Venus, and all things like that. All that are part of his nature. But he, as an individual, is at the center of it. It is, he is both the user of them and the total resonance of what they perform when they perform. You have to aim at the center. Your birth chart is like the same thing. It is something that you focus. You are at the center, and all those things are there. Now, there may be all sorts of planets here. There may be all sorts of planets here. There may be planets which form triangle. There may be planets which form square. As an overall picture. But you have a clear picture there of what the balance of all those functions represent. Now, in this book that I mentioned, I marked the different types. Mark Jones started more or less that. I think somebody else apparently had the same idea vaguely earlier in the century, but Mark wrote the whole book, The Guide to Horoscope Interpretation, which gave those seven basic patterns. And that is the same, is that the first things I think that one should do when you look at chart is to see the pattern of the whole things. It is the balance of the function in of the person, the way the thing is structured within that person. Now, the way I differentiate them, I express them, it's very simple. The chart as a whole, the space of the chart is like the infinite potentiality of human nature. It can move in all directions. Any function can be anywhere. Theoretically, you might say if you have planets all over the place, then you would have a richer nature in the sense that all the possibility, all the type of experience which be involved in and the function of that person.
This is the end of First Steps in the Interpretation of Birth Charts, Part 1, by Dane Rudyar. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Leila Rudyar Hill and was brought to you by RITA, the Rudyar Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard at www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com.